So welcome everybody to my first talk here at this November retreat for our Buddhist society and for our friends from overseas. Hopachan Brahmadi gave you a little introductory talk last night. However, that usually the first talk which is given on a Friday night, because people are tired, their mind is not all that open, so they don't usually remember it anyway. So that's why Ajahn Brahmadi gave the first talk. But now you've rested, had breakfast, there's an opportunity for your minds to be open, reasonably peaceful, so it's a good time to start the talk about meditation. This is a meditation retreat, and sometimes if we go into the theories of things, and sometimes people argue so many different ways to look at an orange from inside and outside, so people can argue over an orange, let alone argue about Buddhism. So instead of arguing about Buddhism, instead of telling you what you're going to find, they're teaching you how to find it. In other words, how to train your mind to be peaceful, to be alert, to be probing, so you can actually see the truth for yourself. As the Buddha would often say, that Buddhas only point the way. It's up to each one of us to walk that way and find out what's there at the end, the destination, the Dhamma. So you will find on this retreat, as in most retreats, I spend most of my time not theorizing. We usually leave that to the question and answer time, where we have a bit of fun and you ask really deep questions then. But on these morning talks, it's basically how to meditate. Practical teachings and tricks so your mind can be peaceful. And as I've often pointed out, if the mind is like a lake, and this is a symbol, a very ancient symbol for the mind being like a body of water, like a lake. If your lake has ripples on the surface, you will never perfectly reflect the full moon and the stars at night. But only when your mind is perfectly still, there's not a ripple on that mind, only then could you have a perfect reflection of the Dhamma. You can get insight. But any ripple distorts what you see, or what rather you think you see, and so it cannot be trusted. So here, my main aim in teaching meditation retreats is to encourage, advise, give all sorts of tips on how to make your mind still. Indeed, that over the years when I've been a Buddhist and then learning Pali and reading the suttas and experiencing some of those states and understanding exactly what the Buddha is saying, sometimes that those translations which have come down to us are not all that accurate. And of course, for meditation, calling this concentration is not very helpful. And the Eightfold Path, the Eighth Factor, Samasamadhi, calling that right concentration, is very misleading. Because when we call it concentration, it means, it implies that we have to put some effort. And also, it becomes associated with very painful memories, or very painful other meanings of that term, such as concentration camps. This is not a concentration camp here in Jhana Grove. There is no barbed wire. Even on the fence outside, we made sure there was just straight wire most of the way, not barbed wire, there's not razor wire. The gate is not locked. You can get out any time you like. There are not watchtowers. You have not got CCTV cameras in your rooms to make sure you get up early in the morning. I am not the camp commandant. So this is not like a concentration camp in the sense that there's going to be a lot of force and fear. So don't even think that meditation is all about concentration. Because if you do that, you will try, you will strive, you put forth effort, and that will only screw up your mind even more. Going back to the simile of the lake. How on earth can you get that lake perfectly smooth? Do you really think that if that lake's got waves on it, and you put your hands in to pat the peaks down, is that going to stop the lake being unstill? The only way you can get a lake to be still is, number one, patience, and number two, stop interfering with it. Just wait. Soon the wind dies down. Soon the waves, they just, by friction, they lose their momentum, and everything eventually becomes calm. So a lot of time in meditation, our job is not to interfere and be patient. And then a few times in this retreat, you'll find that your lake becomes calm. Not all the time, but many times. And that's enough to give you a vision of the Dhamma. So when we talk about stillness, calling this stillness, samadhi is stillness, a still mind. Sama samadhi is a perfect stillness. When you talk about stillness, 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 it gets into your mind where we're aiming in meditation, a still mind. Which means that if the mind is thinking about this, thinking about that, that's not being still. If it's worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow, what's going to happen yesterday, that's not being still. A still mind is something which is poised in this moment. Just like that. There's no thought going on in the mind. You're just here. And the wonderful thing about stillness is that as the mind develops in stillness, little by little, that stillness gets more and more deep, more profound. And with it comes these consequences of increased mindfulness. Your awareness gets stronger and stronger and stronger. Mindfulness, awareness, is a power of the mind. You might call it even a power of the brain. And how can you imagine your brain to have strong mindfulness when it's exhausted? When you've been using it so much just to get here, you know, using it so much to survive in this very difficult life, how can you expect your brain to have strong mindfulness? In fact, because the way we live our modern lives, it will take a time for all the waves on your lake to settle down. And in the meantime, you will find that your mindfulness is not strong at all. In fact, the many times in the first couple of days, you will feel sleepy. The only reason you're feeling sleepy is because you've been driving yourself with willpower. Now you take off that striving, that wanting, that willing, and now your mind and your brain will be saying it's time to catch up. What psychologists say is sleep deficit. So for the first couple of days, I expect many of you to sleep a lot, which is why you've got individual rooms. You can close that door and you can tell your friends, I've been meditating flat out. You say, I've been letting go. I'm being kind to my body. And it is important that you follow that advice. Please don't feel guilty. You have my permission. In fact, sometimes people are so proud and stubborn they refuse to sleep. Sometimes I have to order them to sleep. Why don't we give ourselves some kindness and gentleness? Are we always pushing ourselves? Now this is a story I tell at most retreats, but it's an important story for you to understand. It's a story of a retreat which I gave in Sydney so many years ago. An executive from the CBD arrived very late, maybe 11 p.m. Why? Because tidying up all the affairs in her office just took that amount of time. She still wasn't finished when she left, but that was it, I'm going on to the retreat. These executives, you know, they have to sort of work so hard, they do so many things, so much of their time is called on for their work. So when they came to the retreat, they just got their room, crashed out. When they heard me talk, they were smart enough to understand what I was talking about. They knew they had sleep deficit. They knew their brain was just so wiped out that, yeah, they could sit down and use willpower to stay awake, but that was just screwing up their mind. It wasn't kind. It wasn't gentle. It was not compassionate. So she took my advice, and for the first 3 days, she just slept. And in the interview, she'd come and tell me that she would wake up just before breakfast. And she was in this dormitory room with about a few other women. They'd all be up for the morning meditation and chanting, but she would just carry on sleeping till breakfast. She'd get up for breakfast, have a nice breakfast, and then she'd go straight back to bed again, while all the others in her room were out listening to the talk and meditating. And she'd sleep until lunch, and get up for lunch, and after lunch, have another nap. And the interesting thing which she told me, that she said, you know, she understood, she was sensitive. All the other women who shared her room, she could know what they were saying. Their body language was so strong. She said, she told me they were so angry at me, you know, that I wasn't doing the retreat, I was just sleeping. And I told her, that wasn't anger, that was jealousy. They only wish that they had the guts and the courage to do the same, because they knew that they needed also to sleep. But because of some peer pressure or some spiritual pride, they thought, no, I've got to get up. I've got to get up first of all. I've got to be the first of the hall. I've got to get here before Ajahn Brahm gets here. I know that sometimes it happens on retreats, because I've seen this myself. You know, that on a retreat, you know, you want to stay up the latest. And so you sit here, you know, after the evening sort of questions and answers, finish about 9:15 or something. So I'm going to carry on meditating. And you keep on meditating here, and at 9:30 you open your eyes. And there's still, you know, 4 or 5 other people here. So you close your eyes again and meditate for another quarter of an hour. And you open your eyes again, and damn it, they're still here. Now that's called spiritual pride. That's ego. So don't worry what other people are doing. It's one of the strong teachings which Ajahn Chah taught us in the very, very early years I was in Thailand. You know, you look at other people, maximum 10% of the time. You look at yourself 90% of the time. And 10% is maximum. Less than that is even better. In other words, you look after yourself in this retreat. So that way, if you need to rest, rest at any time of the day or night. Even, we're so kind in this retreat, you don't even need to come to the talks. You can rest if you wish. The talks are recorded. You can catch up on them afterwards. But I would ask, if you do go to sleep through my talks, it's in your room and not, and not in the hall. But the reason I tell the story of that lady from Singapore was because for the first 3 days she just slept and did a tiny bit of meditation. But that was enough for her to really get catch up with what her body needed. And for the next 3 days she felt just so loose, and so her body was cooperating now. It felt good. It felt like the Buddha felt just before he became enlightened, after he practiced the middle path of not torturing or tiring his body. It's interesting, the word Atthakilamata Anuyoga, I'm just splitting up the Pali into the three words. Anuyoga means basically the practice, you know, what you're doing. And Gelamata means which tires, which wearies, which exhausts. And Atta, you know, it's supposed to be the self, but in this particular sense it means your body. So practices which exhaust yourself. You've already been exhausted, so you've got to catch up. And the Buddha realizes no way he'll get into deep meditation or become enlightened when his body was so stressed out with effort. Remember, he wasn't an executive before he became enlightened. You know, he wasn't so worrying about a family. He was so stressed out with his spiritual practice, trying so hard. And that's what I want to warn you against. Stop trying so hard. Relax. So for the first 3 days, this lady relaxed. The next 3 days, her body was very good, so she managed to do more meditation. And the next 3 days, she just took off in her meditation and became what you call one of the star meditators of that retreat. So, you know, she caught up with all the other people. All the other people were struggling and striving right at the very end. She was blissing out. And so that was a very wise woman. She didn't worry about pride. She could sleep there and take all these looks from the other women in her room who thought she was just goofing off. She knew what she needed to do, and she did it. And she was mindful, sensitive enough to her body to know what the body needed. And so, and that's why in this retreat, the schedule is very, very loose indeed. Now, we're not doing this just because Ajahn Brahm is a softie. I do this because I know this is what works, to get your mind very peaceful and beautiful and still. So, you just look at your body, what does it need? The first couple of days, just give it the benefit of the doubt and rest. Because most people are tired. And later on in the retreat, you feel you don't need to sleep so much. You just don't want to. The body feels good, it feels energized. That's a sign that your body is getting calm and peaceful. And now's the time for the mind to get calm and peaceful. So how you do that is, again, just observing this body, and making peace with it, being kind, being gentle with it. As you'll see on some people's t-shirts on their back, these are sayings which I did notice somebody had that t-shirt on today. This is a saying which I always tell people to do during the retreats. It's basic teachings of meditation. It's what you will read in the suttas as a very accurate translation of right thought, right thinking, the second factor of the Eightfold Path. How can you experience or generate stillness when you're struggling so hard? When you're fighting yourself and the world? Every time you fight, you don't create stillness, you create more agitation. So that's one of the first things we do. We remember to make peace with anything which comes into the mind. First of all, make peace with all the other meditators on this retreat. Make peace with the flies when they come out. Make peace with the sound of the crows. Make peace with the sound of people making a noise with their chair, sort of ruffling their bags, coughing, sneezing, all the other people who come into this room, because it's so hard to have 60 or more people being quiet and absolutely silent in a meditation room. And sometimes people complain. Ajahn Brahm, can you please tell people to be quiet and not to bang the door? Can you please tell people not to cough? Can you please tell people not to sneeze? Can you please tell people not to breathe? It's disturbing me. People are people. This is their nature. We make noises. Chairs make noises. Crows make noises. Everything makes a noise. But the teaching is, actually my tummy makes a noise just now. Teaching is, this is our nature, it's the nature of the world, and we can't change that nature, but we can certainly change the way we react to things which are part of nature. Instead of fighting it, getting angry, getting upset at it, we make peace with it. So make peace with the noise in this room. If you make peace with it, you find the noise doesn't disturb you at all. If you try and fight it, just as, you know, armies try to conquer their enemy, if you think that noise is your enemy and try and conquer it, you will find that it will just be more noise. We call that the echo of noise. The echo of noise means someone bangs a chair. And then you think, they banged a chair. They can't bang a chair. I'm going to find out who that was. I'm going to talk to them afterwards. I'm going to tell Ajahn Brahm, I'm going to write a question about it afterwards. I'm going to try and even, I'm rich, I'm going to donate these little things you can put on the edge of chairs so they don't make any noise at all. and you've made so much noise between your ears. And it's the noise which happens between the ears, the complaining, the thinking. That's the real noise, because that's something you can calm down and quieten down. The noise outside you can't do anything about at all. The noise inside, that is your responsibility. So when somebody makes a noise, it doesn't echo between your ears. Years ago I said, that's having like a mind, like a padded cell. I've never seen a padded cell before, but I imagine it's supposed to be where they put these violent criminals in this padded cell, or these crazy people, so that they cannot harm or hurt themselves, because it's just padding, like upholstery, on the floor, on the walls, on the ceiling. They can bang their head, and it's just banging your head on a cushion or a mattress. It just doesn't hurt at all. And also, if you bang something on a padded cell, it doesn't bounce back. And having a mind like a padded cell, which means a thought comes in, squash, and it doesn't bounce back again. All its momentum is absorbed by the padding on the wall. You have a feeling in the body of pain. It doesn't echo at all. It's just this beautiful padded cell where the event happens and then it's gone. Nothing lingers. There is no further disturbance. Just one disturbance, that's all. Like a padded cell in your brain. If you can do something like that, you realize that whatever's happening outside will not disturb you. You let it go. We call that making peace with our world. And if you can make peace with the outside world, you can also start to make peace with your inner world. I'm talking about here your body. Our bodies are always aching and painful. I just caught a few of our monks the other day. I won't tell you which particular monk, but he gave the talk last night. And he was getting up going, oi, oi, because he's over 40 now, 46 or something. And I said, look, you're too young to go oi when you get up. Well, that's what happens, isn't it? We get really stiff. And that's actually, for those who don't know, as Suwadee would know this, in Thailand, when someone gets old, that's actually what they call them. They call them like, poor means Mr., mayor means Mrs. They call them poor oi and mayor oi. Like grandfather oi and grandmother oi. And the reason they do that is because every time they get up, they say oi, oi, oi. I don't know if they're the same in Sri Lanka, they probably do in the villages. So that's our nature, our body, always to be a bit stiff. There's always something wrong with your body. There's not one person in this room who's healthy. You got your sicknesses, I got mine. And it's wonderful in our retreat, we usually share our sicknesses. To a certain degree anyway. So we're always going to have a sort of, a reasonably sort of sick body. But it's good enough. So what we make peace with our body. Oh, you got a cough. Make peace with it. Don't struggle with it. Don't get upset at it. And you got an itchy nose, scratch it. And it's really important, actually, to make peace with your body. If you feel like coughing during the meditation, please cough. Don't try and suppress it. Not only is that a psychologically bad thing to suppress, but it's also a health hazard in this room. And I'll tell you why. Very often, people have had an itchy throat during the meditation sessions, and they try to stop the cough. And all they've succeeded in doing is called building up pressure. So when the pressure does get so strong, when they do cough, it's like a volcano going off in the room. And all sorts of unhealthy liquids spray all around you. And usually what happens, they just get into this big coughing fit and they run out of the room, slam the door, and they really disturb people. So it's best just to cough and get over the way. know, you're trying to do the best thing, you're trying to be kind and not to sort of disturb other people, but in the end you're disturbing them even more. So make peace with the fact that you've got to float, it's going to be itchy sometimes, you've got a nose, it's going to be sneezy, you know, this is nature of our body. So just make peace with it. And be kind. The kindness is such an important part of meditation that you will find that you're never kind enough to your body and to your mind. Sometimes people say, yeah, they've been doing metta meditation kind of for a long time. You haven't done enough. Do some more. What does it mean by being kind? That saying in my book, opening the door of your heart. Opening the door of your heart to your cough. Cough. Open the door of the heart, to your itchy ear. Don't worry what other people see. It's just nature. It's, you know, putting your finger in your ear and giving it a good scratch is not against the 5 precepts nor the 8 precepts. The Buddha actually never even made it a rule for the monks. You're allowed to do that. And it feels good afterwards. In other words, just be kind to yourself and be kind to your body as well. So, what do you mean by being kind to your body? Open the door of your heart to your body, just allowing it to be. And making sure that you're not torturing your body. Again, I think it was actually on that same retreat, the guy who was taking me to that retreat, you know, it's a 2-hour journey from Sydney into this retreat, and on the way we were talking about everything, and he had just finished a retreat the same place a few years ago, and I asked him how it was, and he said it was very, very painful. I said, really? Wow, what was going on? And he said, whenever we went into that meditation room, he said, I had to sit for an hour, and I, you know, then you had to get up and you had to go back and sit again, and sometimes my back was so painful, my knees were hurting, I was getting very, very frustrated, and everything was just so awful. He said that, you know, silently inside of him, he called the place the torture chamber. And that's what it's like sometimes in some meditation centers. The meditation room is like a torture chamber. You've got to sit here and just endure, and endure, and endure. You know, anybody would know if they followed, you know, all the discussions on how they treat terrorists in places like Guantanamo Bay. That's called stress positions. You know, when you put sort of a prisoner in an unpleasant situation which they've got to maintain for long periods of time, that's against the law. Well, we could get done by Amnesty International some of our meditation retreats, but not here. Here you have walls to lean against. That's what the walls are there. It's not just to hold up. Actually, to hold up the roof, there's actually metal columns underneath these bricks over here. They hold up the roof. The walls are here for you to lean on. Lean on them. The chairs. What are the chairs here for? To sit on. So sit on. In other words, look after your body. I don't know why people waste so much time on this. Even on the last retreat just 2 weeks ago, quite a few people in interviews, they come up to me and said, oh, it's so difficult to meditate, my knees are so sore, and you know, my back is stiff. I said, well, have you been sitting on the floor? Yeah. Why don't you sit on a chair? Oh, no, I can't sit on a chair, I must sit on the floor. I'm a serious meditator. You're not a serious meditator, you're a dumb meditator. So please sit on the chairs if you've got a stiff body. And if you really want to, you can actually just alternate. You know, one sit on the floor, one sit on the chair, the next sit on the floor, the next sit on the chair. Alternate it just so your body feels good. And that way, you're being kind to your body. But that kindness goes a bit deeper. What you can do to your body is just ask it, body, what do you need? It's amazing that so few people even ask the body what it wants. They assume that they know. Just like sometimes people, they don't even ask me what I want, they just give it to me. They assume that they know. Now, if you really love someone and care for them, you don't just give them what you think they want or what you think they like. You ask them first of all, Ajahn Brahm, what would you like? So ask your body. Body, what would you like? What do you want right now? And in the last retreat, one of the meditators really got that on board. They said they get up every morning and ask the body, what do you want? What do you need this morning? And their body became like a great friend. Throughout the whole retreat, they weren't the master or mistress of their body. They were the friend of their body. They were being kind to it at last. And once they were kind to their body, the body suddenly was saying, I don't feel like meditating, I want to walk. So they take it a walk through the grounds. Now I need a rest, I need a cup of tea, I need to go to the toilet. But a lot of the time the body said, yeah, come on, let's meditate. And that's actually how we treat our body. In the same way we treat our mind, with kindness. I gave the simile of taking a friend out for a cup of coffee. I don't know if you know, you may have a free afternoon or a free sort of hour and you sort of ask your friend, you give them a call and say, do you want to come out for a cup of coffee? Now if you do call your friend, imagine if you called up your friend and said this, friend, you're going out to have a cup of coffee with me this afternoon. We're not going to go to Starbucks, we're not going to go to Gloria Jean's, we're going to go to Dome. And you're not going to have a cappuccino or a latte, you're going to have a flat white. And you're not going to have sugar, you're going to have no sugar at all. And I know you like muffins, but no muffins, we're going to have a biscuit. And we're going to sit in this table, and you're going to sit on that chair, I'm going to sit on this chair, and we're going to talk about this, we're going to be there for an hour and a half, not an hour and a quarter, not an hour and three quarters, and we're going to do this, okay? Now what would your actually friend say? He said, oh, I'm busy, I'm sorry, I can't come. Now do you get the message? Because that's the way you treat your mind. You say, mind, we're going to sit for an hour and a quarter. We're not going to sit on a chair, we're going to sit on the cushion. Not on this side, on that side. And you're going to watch the breath. You're not going to actually do metta meditation, you're not going to sort of mess around, you're going to watch the breath. You're going to do it for this way and not that way, okay, mind? No wonder whenever your mind sees you coming, it runs away. Your mind is terrified of you. You've given it such a hard time in the past. Now you know why your mind is restless. Or why sometimes it just escapes into sloth and torpor or fantasies. Of course it's restless. It does anything to get away from you. Now imagine if you rang up your friend and said, hey, do you want to have a cup of coffee today? I said, well, where would you like to go? I said, I've heard of this great new coffee shop. Really? Oh, let's go and try it out. And you go there and say, what do you want? And your friend says, I'll have a latte. Is it very good? Yeah, the latte's good. Oh, I'll have one too. And they say, what do you want to talk about? Where do you want to see it? Do you want a muffin or a biscuit or a sandwich? What do you want? When you treat your friend like that, your friend loves hanging out with you. In fact, you go out there for an hour and you end up spending all afternoon there. 2-3 hours go by because you're having great fun with a friend. You're not telling your friend what to do. You're just enjoying their company. Now imagine you do that to your mind. Hey mind, what do you want to do right now? I've heard this great meditation retreat at Jhana Grove. Do you want to come? Oh yeah, I'll try it out. And you say, then what do you want to do? And the mind says, metta meditation. Let's do some metta. Okay, I'm into that. And you do metta meditation together. You do it together. You don't tell the mind what to do. You're a friend of your mind. And you treat it with respect. You are not the master or mistress of your mind. Please know that's a basic teaching of the Buddha. It's not me, not mine, not a self. You don't own things, so stop trying to control them. Be friends with them. You don't own your body. You don't own your mind either. So why are you always trying to control it and telling it what to do? No wonder you get nowhere in meditation. So be kind to your mind. Mind, what do you want to do right now? Let's hang out together. The mind says, nah, I want to sort of go wandering off. Okay, off you go. Don't control your mind. Instead, be kind to your mind. Saying to your mind, mind, whatever you do, wherever you go, you'll always be my friend. If you go crazy, I'll still love you. If you're totally restless, if you think the most weirdest sexual fantasies, the deviant, psychotic things, if you're just planning your next axe murder, I will still love you, right? Now doing something like that means you're so friendly to your mind. Your mind loves you back. So it actually wants to stay with you. It's with you. It does things together. So you do the breath together, you do loving kindness together, everything you do together. Because it's an inseparable friend. No longer are you being cruel to it. And you find because of that, the mind stays, becomes peaceful. You're not at war with yourself anymore. Which means there's a peace. And from that peace comes incredible stillness. We also all know that craving leads to suffering. Craving is another type of fighting, wanting, trying to change things. Loving kindness, being kind, is the opposite of craving. It's just allowing people to be, allowing your mind to be, allowing your body to be, exactly as it is, with unconditional mindfulness. Not mindfulness which wants to make things change, but mindfulness which is just happy with what is right here, right now. Is all you've got. And the other part is being very, very gentle. Being very, very gentle with yourself over this retreat. Stop forcing. Because if you force, you get tense again, you get tight. And you know that being a meditation teacher, sometimes people come up to me and they have got trauma from other meditation techniques. They've been trying too hard. And sometimes it gives them these headaches, this tightness inside their body or their mind. And I know where that comes from. Just trying, pushing far too hard. It's not the way to go into good meditation. I know that from personal experience. So be very gentle. Because gentleness also means a lot of patience as well. I know everybody thinks, my goodness, one day is already gone, there's only 8 days to go. And this is very rare. I've got an opportunity to meditate. I've got to make the best out of this. I've got to rush. I've got to make sure I don't waste any time. This is a rare opportunity. You know how hard it is to get in one of these retreats. After 12 minutes, it was all gone. I know that some of you, apparently, that it opened up 5 minutes early and you were there 5 minutes before it started. You're very, very smart. Whatever it is. You think, my goodness, I might not be able to get on another retreat again. I can't waste time. I've got to do something. I've got to work hard. I can't sleep. I can't. Be very patient. Because it's only in patience you can find any peace and stillness. That's one of the reasons why in this hall there are no clocks. Except the one I've got over here. But you can't see it. That's hidden. So you can't see any time. I would advise you, in this hall, never to bring your watches in this hall. Leave them in your room. So you don't know what time it is. So you haven't got a clue what time it is. Don't worry about breakfast or lunch. There's another clock you have. It's called your stomach. That will tell you when breakfast is or when lunch is. For certain. Which means that we don't become prisoners of time. At work, at home, you know, time is just so important for you. You get into trouble if you're late. Here you don't get into any trouble at all if you're late. So you don't have to be a prisoner of the clock. Be free. It's also why here comes the terrible joke again. I tell this every year. This is why we don't have any bells to wake you up in the morning. We don't have any bells to tell you it's breakfast. We don't have bells to get you to come to the talk. We don't have any bells to tell you it's the time for the evening chanting. And we call this, what do we call it? No bells, silence. With all these retreats are supposed to keep no bell silence. And they haven't got a clue what no bell silence is. And the recent retreat, Daniel was saying, they had a big drum, they're beating this drum all the time. Bang, 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 bang. Goodness, that must drive you crazy. So no bells. What do you want a bell for anyway? That's like being at school again, isn't it? That's being in the army. It's all about control. That's not how you get discipline. That's not how you get peace. And I know that from personal experience, because sometimes you are meditating, and you're getting a really nice meditation, and somebody bangs, somebody bings a gong. And imagine that was you. You know, you're just about to get into jhana, and I go bang on the gong. I've made bad karma by doing that. Stop you getting into jhana. Imagine you're just about to get enlightened. And just all these amazing insights are coming up, and bang! Which means you have to wait for another lifetime. Yeah, that's really bad karma for me. So I don't want to do that. You have no bells. Which means you can get up any time you want. You can meditate however long you want. Actually, that was wrong. I said that wrong. You don't get up whenever you want. Whenever we want. You and your body. So ask yourself, body and me, when do we want to get up? And you don't just meditate whenever you want, whenever you and your mind want. It's a joint thing. And you meditate however long you and your mind want. It's a wonderful thing, because sometimes you're meditating there, and you know it's time to get up. You're not going to get anywhere. And it could be 5 minutes, it could be 5 hours. You don't know. Just see what happens. So don't be a prisoner of time. And that way it means that there are times on this retreat your meditation will be going really, really well. You just want to keep on meditating. Keep on meditating. Don't worry about breakfast or lunch or dinner. Actually, there's no dinner, so you can't worry about it anyway. So don't worry about things. Just carry on and enjoy yourself. So keep it totally natural. And if it's too little or too long, just get up early. Doesn't matter. When you keep it very gentle like that, you're being very patient. I know that people, because of our training in this world, are always wanting something to happen. Many of you have come here just wanting to get deeper in meditation, to get some peace, to get some jhanas, to get some insight, to get something. Please remember, you're going to get absolutely nothing out of this retreat. Just assume you're going to make absolutely no progress. You're going to be totally just getting no benefits from this retreat at all. And then you have no expectations. When you expect something, you are just hindering this whole process. So please don't want anything. As my teacher Ajahn Chah would often say, you are not coming on this meditation retreat to gain something. You're coming here to let things go. Not to gain, but to abandon things. Not to go out of this retreat more wealthy spiritually or materially, but more empty spiritually and materially, which is why we have the donation box. So you come here to lose things, not to gain things. Well, that's a very good attitude, because when you meditate trying to get something, it changes the whole attitude, acquisitive, grasping, attaching, wanting. When you meditate trying to lose things, let things go, And that is the path which leads to Nibbana. So I'm trying to let go of all this craving and wanting and all these attachments and all these ideas of achievements and attainments. Try to let go of those ideas. So we're here to see how much we can let go of, not how much we can get. If you go in that direction, it's amazing how much peace you can find. How can you have any peace when there's an attainment that you want which you haven't got yet? That will always create more striving, more wanting. And one of my favourite sayings of this year is whenever you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. You can't have peace when you want something more. So if you want more meditation experience, more insight, more enlightenment, more anything, it means you can't have any peace at all. That type of patience is called waiting in the future. We're waiting for something to happen. We're waiting for the jhana to come. We're waiting for enlightenment to come. We're waiting for the limiters, the lights, the insights. We're waiting in the future. That is not what patience means. Patience means waiting in the present. Which is very different than waiting in the future. Waiting in the present means we're here. Or rather we call it waiting on the present. Like a person in a restaurant waiting on the tables. Mindful, caring for the customer who's having their lunch. That's your job, that's your patience, to be waiting on this present moment. Not waiting for something to happen, not expecting something to happen, not hoping something to happen, not please, please, please may something happen. But just being caring and attentive on what's happening right now. Patience in the moment. There we have the gentleness. Because when you want something, you're screwing up, you're being hard on your body and your mind. So those three things, for me, are the essence of meditation. Making peace, being kind, and being gentle. That's all you have to do. It doesn't matter what you're doing. Whether you're sleeping, whether you're eating, whether you're walking, whether you are sitting down experiencing nimittas or sitting down with a crazy mind, there's something you can always do. You can always make peace with what you're experiencing. You can always be kind with what you're experiencing. And you can always be gentle with what you're experiencing. If you remember that and practice it, you'll know how to meditate. Meditation is not what you're aware of. Meditation is about how you're aware of what you're aware of. It's the how, not the what. It's the practice, not the goal. It's not where you are, but in which direction you're going. So, you can always make peace. You can always be kind. You can always be gentle. Which means on this retreat, you can meditate throughout the day with no pause at all. You're not sitting, you're not walking, you're just making peace. You're being kind, you're being gentle. And of course, if you make peace, if you're not fighting, what happens? Of course it leads to peace. Of course it is this beautiful kindness, incredible metta. Of course it's beautiful gentleness. It leads to stillness. It leads to energy. It leads to incredible mindfulness and happiness. And the ability to meditate very, very, very deeply. And that's when it really, really takes off. If you follow that path of not wanting anything, you get everything and much more than you ever expected. Whenever you try and aspire, it never works. Whenever you let go, just being kind, making peace, being gentle, you create the causes who are still peaceful, blissful, deep mind. That's how I practice. That's how I know it works. That's what I said is straight from the word of the Buddha, from the second of the Eightfold Path. That's what happens. That's how it works. So your job is just to follow the instructions. Be kind to your body. Be kind to your mind. Wait in the moment, not in the future. And you'll find you get much more than you ever expected from this meditation retreat. And you'll be one happy customer. So that's the talk for this morning. The introductory talk, which basically is all you need. So those of you who don't want to come to another talk, it's fine by me. Nevertheless, I will give more talks every morning saying the same thing from different angles. And there will be opportunity in the evenings for questions and answers, which you put on pieces of paper. And starting tomorrow, not the first day, because I want to get you all settled in. The next day there will be opportunities for interviews. I'll put pieces of paper where you registered on that little lectern there. And you can write your name down if you need an interview. But I would say, many of the questions people ask for the interviews, they're such good questions, it's much better they put them down on pieces of paper so they could be asked to everybody, so everybody could share the question and the answer. So think twice before you put your name down for an interview. The question I want to ask, can I actually ask this by putting it on a piece of paper and asking it in front of everybody? Because I'll just read out the question and give the answer. Because that means that your question helps not just you, but other people as well. And also, please, on the interview time starting tomorrow, please, no personal problems about your husband, about your wife, about your kid, about your boss at work, about what you're going to do in life, about your sexual life, or whatever else. Please. It's supposed to be about meditation, because sometimes some of these questions can go on. It's only supposed to be 10 minutes each. Sometimes we keep going on and on and on and on and on. Look, what do I know about marriage? What do I know about working with a terrible boss in our modern world? Maybe I am the terrible boss, I don't know. So please keep it to meditation, nice and brief. And you don't have to come every day, you know, maybe at the very most every second day, 3 days or whatever. So please don't keep putting your name down in the morning and in the afternoon. Putting 3 slots, 1, 2, 3, one after the other, for 30 minutes. So that way that, you know, you can be kind to me as well. Okay, so, now is there any questions or comments so far? Okay, remember, be kind to yourself. If you want to have a rest, have a rest. If you want to have a cup of tea, have a cup of tea. Just go for a walk, have a walk. It's a nice place, peaceful time. Don't expect anything out of the first 2 or 3 days, except just to rest and relax. Okay, best of luck. For those who don't know, that's the 3 Ajahn Brahm sadhus. Because look, whatever you do, I never like doing anything half-hearted. So when you do 3 sadhus, this is the way you do them. Sadhu. Sadhu! Sadhu! Okay, all together? Sadhu! 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 You see, it creates happiness, doesn't it? It wakes you up. It's a good thing to do. If you go, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's a waste of time. Okay. There he goes. Have a nice morning.